Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And nothing says morning like a classic sausage McMuffin with egg. Right now, get this all-time favorite for just $2 on the $1-$3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
With Metro and the best deal in wireless, whatever your goal, however you hustle, you can rule your day. Get two lines with 5G access included for just $35 a month per line, period. With taxes and regulatory fees always included, so you know exactly how much you pay every month. All on America's largest 5G network at no extra charge. Plus, at Metro, get the latest 5G phones, like a Samsung Galaxy, for less than $100 when you switch. That's the best deal in wireless, so you can take control of your day wherever it takes you. Metro by T-Mobile, empowering you to rule your day. Requires autopay. First month is $40 per line for 2 lines. Samsung A51 requires port from eligible carrier and ID validation limited to 2 per account. Coverage not available in some areas. See Metro by T-Mobile.com or store for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for another exclusive Collider interview. I'm very excited about this one because this is the first time I'm talking to Charles Hood since, what year was it at South by Southwest?
I think it was 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
It feels like it was longer ago than that.
I hope not.
for the movie Night Owls, which I still love. You know, one of my favorite things about that movie, too, is the poster. It's such a perfectly designed poster that I'll never forget the look of.
Yeah, Jay Shaw did that for us. He's at Mondo, and he's an amazing artist. And
yeah,
I guess I've heard that he doesn't really do posters anymore, and now he's in the board games division. But he did an incredible job with that poster. I tracked him down because I had seen other posters that he'd done. He has this very unique style, which is, you know, you see in the Night Owls poster. And I, through a friend, he had designed a poster of their documentary, and I was like, how can I get in touch with this guy? He gave me his email address, and I had to email him and convince him, and was like, he's like, I don't usually take solicitations or whatever. He's like, I'll watch your movie and see. And then
not to make this about him, but what does he do in board games now?
I think Mondo designs board games of popular franchises and stuff to make fun. It's
you
like a
shouldn't
whole
have
subculture.
Told me that because I already have a problem with their posters and their tiki mugs. Like, I need to be buying more Mondo stuff.
Well, and Drew Taylor is my buddy. He and I have a Mission Impossible podcast, and we've been talking about maybe going to them to be like, you should do a Mission
Whenever
Impossible board game.
Whenever he talks about that, I didn't know it was you that he did that with. That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah, a fun way to connect the dots.
I've been meaning to email Jay Shaw just to say, like, hey, I hear you're doing board games now. Would you be interested in doing a Mission Impossible one? because we would be promoting the hell out of that. Sorry, a lot. I'm just sort of saying a lot of things all at once here.
I love that.
But the poster, you know, and then he called me afterwards when he saw the movie and was like, I love it. It's great. I was thrilled. I couldn't believe he wanted to do the poster. It was great.
So, just so people know up top, you're here specifically talking about A Nasty Piece of Work, which everyone can watch right now on Hulu. It is one of the most recent entries into the Into the Dark series. But I do want to ask you a little bit about what happened immediately after Night Owls, because as you well know, that was one of the movies at that year at Sundance that made the biggest impression on me. So I'm just curious what it was like going there with your first feature and what the response was like and what kind of doors it opened for you.
Well, it was great. I mean, it was unreal. I mean, it was like that was exactly where we thought the movie fit, was at South by Southwest. To go there, like it was a dream come true. And then we, you know, premiered, I think, the opening night, I think, was it?
I remember it being very early in the festival.
And it was at one of the bigger venues, and it was really cool. And they screened it, I think, four times. They ended up adding a screening because it was like a buzz screening or whatever, which was really cool. And we ended up getting distribution out of that, which was obviously the ultimate goal. And so it From MGM through their Orion label, they released the movie. So if you see the movie now, you see it on – it's on Amazon Prime now. But it was on Netflix for a couple of years first. If you saw the movie now, it has, you know, the Orion logo from so many of our famous – some of my favorite movies growing up, you know, RoboCop. And
that
all
must
this,
be
know,
like, one of the like, most exciting things about all of this.
It's so cool to see the stars line up and do an O, and it's just – it was thrilling. So, yeah, I mean, all of that came, you know, snowballed out of going to South by Southwest.
That's so cool.
We played at a bunch of more festivals that year, and then it came out in December. All in 2015, it all happened. And then, it played in 10 theaters and, 10 cities, really small venues, but it was really cool to have it play in theaters, and I really wanted to soak it up at the time because I was like, I don't know if this will ever happen again because you could see where things were going.
I had a lot of faith, but I do understand that mentality.
We played at the Los Feliz 3 here in LA, and so I would go over there and just like eat pie across the street when I was up on the marquee, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And it was an amazing thrill ride. And then the movie came out, and it was on Netflix for a while and did really well on Netflix, which was great. It came out at the same time as like Stranger Things, and it was like, you know, it was just doing a great. There were like charts at the time that it had it really high up there. It was just below Stranger Things for the first couple weeks, which was really cool. It led to more work that I got from my management company, Haven Entertainment. They produced these shows for Complex Networks that played – it was part of Go90.
Well aware of Complex and Go90 in this office.
Oh, you are.
We worked on a show for Go90 for a good while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was that?
I've never heard someone else name drop Go90. It was called Awesome Tacular with Jeremy Johns, and it was basically a show about movies and televisions, and it had a movie games element to it and a comic book shopping element. It was a lot of fun to work
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Go90 didn't advertise the app at all. Nobody even knew about it. It was free for everyone.
Yeah, I was curious what was going on with that.
Yeah, it was really well designed and it didn't really have ads. It was a really great situation.
So is that In the Vault?
That's the Go90 pilots. One. I did In the Vault, which was my good friend Ben Epstein created the show, and it's a really, really awesome mystery show.
So can we watch it somewhere else now that Go90 is trying
to find a home.
Okay.
The other show, Play by Play, I hear is going to Roku Channel.
Oh, so Play by Play you made, but did it ever – because didn't it shut – Go90
so
shut
both,
down?
Both shows, In the Vault and Play by Play, first season went on to – Go90.
Okay.
And they both seemingly did well. They did well enough to get renewed. In the Vault, we shot a second season that never got released. And then Play by Play, we shot a second and third season that never got released.
Because I'm looking at the dates on Play by Play, and it says 2017 to 2019. And I'm like, I thought Go90 didn't exist in 2019.
Yeah. I mean, we finished it. I think we finished shooting in 2017, that one.
Oh, wow.
And we finished shooting In the Vault last, I think, 2018 spring. But they never got shown anywhere. Which is really unfortunate because so many people put a lot of effort and work into, and it's really – they're great shows.
That's crazy. I can't imagine going through that.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But, you know, I have a hope because the shows are good enough. I think they will find a home, I hope. From what I've heard, Roku Channel is going to have Play by Play.
Okay.
And I don't know what's in store for In the Vault, but I hope that'll go somewhere too. In the Vault's like it's a cool like murder mystery set in a college dorm, like freshman year. All these people are coming to college, and they all have their identities that they've sort of putting forward to everybody that you can sort of start over. And so it's like who are these people really? Who they're putting forward? And one of their dorm mates dies mysteriously, and then it's like did one of them kill this person?
So it's a horror tinged show.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of my first step into a little bit more of a thriller thing. So I've been mostly doing comedy before. So
it helped
me transition into this.
I was really surprised when you were attached to an Into the Dark, not even episode. They're all feature films. an Into the Dark film, because the last I had heard from you was Night Owls, which was not in line with that whatsoever.
No. But I mean, I think Night Owls is like, it's a dark comedy.
It's definitely dark.
You know, within the first 5 minutes, one of the main characters tries to kill herself. So, you know, it's like it's heavy and it's funny. And I think this episode, I don't know if you got a chance to watch Nasty Piece of Work, but it's also a very dark comedy.
Yeah.
You know.
It does feel a little in line with that. Once I watched it, I was able to connect the dots. But even before you signed on for Into the Dark, were you just a big horror fan in general?
Yeah. I mean, I mean really everything – I love all genres, but I think for me, comedy and the spectrum between comedy and horror and everything in between is all my favorite stuff.
It's not like a very easy thing to find that perfect balance between horror and comedy.
Yeah.
I feel like when you see a movie that does strike that balance just right, you don't see that very often. I feel like one of the best things that I've seen all year in that respect is probably Ready or Not. It's just like a fun, wild, intense ride with like a hint of humor to it.
Right.
And it works so well.
Yeah. I mean, some of my favorite movies. I mean, I love, The Shining is one of my top 10 favorite movies. And The Thing, which maybe doesn't have as much comedy, but there is some comedy in it.
Is that what you were watching a lot when you were young? Horror?
You know, my parents didn't let me watch horror when I was little, but I had a couple of neighbors who they had all the horror movies, and I would stay over there and I would get really scared and I wouldn't be able to stay the whole night because I wouldn't be able to sleep because I was so scared.
What scares you? Because like there's something different for everyone. Is it paranormal? Is it slasher?
I don't, you know, when I was a kid, Jaws really scared the crap out of me. I was so scared. I was scared of swimming pools. Because I was afraid of sharks so badly, which is completely nonsense. But I was afraid that there would be a shark in the swimming pool. Like I was so scared because of Jaws, and I think I had caught a glimpse of Jaws. I remember I was so young, and it was like a party at some family event we were going to, and it was just on the TV in the kitchen. And I was just watching it on the TV in the kitchen. And it was probably edited for television or something too, but it was still so disturbing to me that sharks were the scariest thing to me.
Even just the opening scene of Jaws, you don't see anything, but there's something so vicious about it. The first time I had ever watched it, I think that was the thing that kind of freaked me out the most.
Well, just the gurgling sound that she makes as she's sort of being pulled into the water and just like trying to scream, but her – you know, mouths full
it's always
of water.
Those little details that really stick in your mind that you remember.
Yeah. So I've always loved and every Halloween I've spent all of October watching horror movies. You know, everything
that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite horror movie of this year?
That's a good question.
Clearly, I'm in list making mode right now. So that's all I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what. Can you name me some horror movies?
Some of my personal favorites are Us. That's up there.
Yeah, okay.
Crawl is so good.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies of the year. Crawl.
I can't believe how well that movie was done.
Yes. No, I love that movie. I actually am a big fan of Aja's, which I think – I don't know why people didn't get it, but the Piranha movie he made. I thought it was so funny.
I like the first Piranha.
I'm
a little scarred by Piranha 3DD, though. Have you seen that one?
I didn't see that one.
That one's not
thought
the best.
I thought Aja had such a command of the tone of Piranha 3D, the one that came out in 2011.
I mean, that's a good example of something that hits the horror comedy balance.
Yeah. And I think – I don't know if people just didn't get it? Or
admittedly, or... I would say the first time around, I was very put off by it. And it's one of those things where every single time I watch it, I find myself, I don't know, quoting it and loving it even more.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not that it's horror comedy, but I had a similar thing with Step Brothers, where the first time it came out, I'm like, oh, this is just stupid. I don't like it. And then before I knew it, I was watching it over and over and over and repeating all the lines.
It's one of my favorite movies, Step Brothers. And the first time I saw it, there were a couple of jokes that just stuck with me. But other than that, I was like, I'm not really sure what I think of this movie. Because is it even a movie?
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird.
It's a weird thing when comedies grow on you like that. And I mean, I guess that's part of the sign of when something is going to go on to become a classic, when it just continues to grow on you with every viewing.
They just get better and better.
That process fascinates me.
Yeah.
You know what other process fascinates me? Into the Dark. So it has been described to me by many people as basically this speeding train that you just have to jump on when the opportunity comes your way. Is that the same thing that happened to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we had maybe 2.5 weeks of prep, maybe. I think I signed on in early July. We were shooting, I think, by July 20-something, I think. Part of the prep was affected by the holiday, the July 4th holiday. Huh. So, like, you know, we like missed out on half a week of prep because of that. So it was insane.
So when you say you signed on, what happened at that point? Did you go to them with a finished script?
No. So they had a script already. It was a great script written by Paul Soder, who is one of the Broken Lizard guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's like an even darker version of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And as soon as I read it, I was like, this is awesome. And I went to go in an interview for it. And I think Paul was maybe originally going to direct it, but he had other obligations for other TV show that he's on right now. And so I was just lucky enough to be able to hop onto this. And, you know, we had to, you know, develop the script as much as we could in the 2 weeks. It didn't really need much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, you know, some notes that came from Blumhouse and some notes that came from me, but really not much. It was in great shape.
That is absolutely wild how quickly you have to jump into something like that. But one of my favorite things that I keep hearing about, too, is just, you know, it's pairing creators that I really admire, the two of you and just with Erlinger and Carter. It's just – it's very exciting seeing two people that are really good with the genre come together. And I feel like Into the Dark is doing that. It's creating a community.
I mean, it amazes me what they're able to do. To make 12 movies a year, period, is difficult. To be able to do it at the quality that they're doing. And I think that they're just getting better and better, too.
If you had the choice, though, what holiday would you have picked? Like, are you excited that you got Christmas?
Yeah, so excited. I love Christmas movies. It's the same thing, you know, I spend all of October watching Halloween movies, horror movies. And then at Christmas time, my wife and I have the Christmas movies that we watch every year. And they're always kind of anti-Christmas movies. You know, we watch Bad Santa. We watch The Ref. And the Ref, I think, is a movie that nobody ever talks about, which is incredible.
I have not heard anyone name drop that.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's great. It was a big influence on Night Owls, actually. I mean, it's a great comedy that Ted Demme directed.
That might have been the last time I heard someone name drop. That is when I interviewed you for Night Owls.
So to be able to do a Christmas movie and to do kind of a dark Christmas movie is just such a thrill.
And do you know what it was that inspired him to craft that particular story with that setup there?
Well, I think I don't know if he would say this in interviews or not, but I think he did have a specific family portion of a family that he was basing it on, someone who he had met before. I don't want to say it in case.
Oh my!
He doesn't want me to say it.
That is going to completely change when I rewatch that movie with that in mind. That's interesting.
I don't want to say it in case he doesn't want it out there. But he knows some people that he said this is totally what they're like. That this is like he witnessed this that this is how they feel about wealth and how they, you know, very specific. I mean, he was very specific about things that he felt like, you know, like there shouldn't be any. We had one scene with colored Christmas lights and he was like, there should never be any colored Christmas lights. That's not like, because this level of like upper class, like they're like Christmas lights are white or yellow. There's no red or blue or anything like that.
Wow. absolutely fascinating.
So he knew it firsthand. Yeah.
Huh. That's absolutely wild. And now I keep going back to certain bits in it, and I find it very curious.
I mean, I think none of what actually happens in the movie is based on anything.
I would imagine that was the case.
People who are that wealthy and bored.
Yeah,
and, you know.
Yeah. I feel like I've actually seen quite a few movies recently that kind of tap into that a little bit.
Yeah. It's sort of – it's interesting. A couple of the critics were responding to that. I think it's a cool thing that's kind of been going on, the movies this year that have been – kind of Parasite, I think, sort of did that too, which is a great movie.
Parasite, Ready or Not, Knives Out,
So it's an interesting trend that's happening.
I feel like we should do a quadruple feature of all four of them. You should just watch them back to back to back.
Hey, I mean, if we're mentioned in the same breath as those movies, that's an honor. That's nice to hear.
I was curious to hear a little bit about what it's like working with some of the folks who have worked on most of the Into the Darks, because I know they keep some of the crew members on. So do you find that you're kind of playing catch up with their process, or are they adjusting to your directing style?
Well, so our episode was actually a unique one in that they were shooting two at once. They didn't normally have to do that, but there was a scheduling hiccup or something that happened where suddenly they had to do two episodes at once. And so because of that, we didn't have the normal crew. So we had an all-new crew. So it was a whole new bag.
So what was it like for everybody?
Because it was crazy. I mean, it's a speeding train, like you said. I mean, it's just, and people who weren't as used to the process had to learn very quickly how it went. You know, it's a freight train.
And what's it like right at the very beginning? Because Erlinger and Carter had told me that they were allowed to, you know, run with what they wanted to. Are there any suggestions as far as, you know, adhering to like a little bit of a house style or something to make, you know, each episode of Into the Dark feels different, but to make it all feel like it exists in the same world in a way?
There really wasn't. I mean, they were really awesome about you know, being really supportive of whatever the director wanted to do. So, you know, it was amazing. And they hired all the department heads. I mean, so that, you know, in that way that they are in control in that way, sort of the look in a way. Like, there's a limit to that, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, I came in and had ideas, and I like to work with different people. So it was great to sit down with Ashley, our production designer, you know, and James, our DP, and Megan, our costume designer, and just you know, I mean, we had to hit the ground running. You know, they came with their ideas, and then I would just very quickly say, let's go in this direction or that direction, but, you know, this is all not looking great, you know. And it was a crazy process. But I think the only thing that – and I was happy. I think I was actually up for an episode in the first season. This is now the second season, technically.
Yeah.
And at that time, I think they were not shooting as wide of an aspect ratio. And now they switched it somewhere along the way, and now they're doing a wider one. So I was actually happy. That's the one restriction that they had, was that they are shooting, you know, 2.35.
Do you happen to know why they did that? I'm fascinated, especially with more movies landing on Netflix now. I'm just very fascinated by the idea of shooting for a different medium, because I know Netflix has certain rules as well.
Yeah, Netflix likes to shoot 2:1, and that's what they were shooting for Into the Dark at the beginning. I don't know what Hulu does. Like, what do you know? Handmaid's Tale? Are they 2:1?
I have absolutely no clue. But now I'm going to look that up.
Well, it's funny because 2:1 wasn't really that popular of an aspect ratio until Fincher brought it back for House of Cards, and then it became kind of a standard for Netflix because the main ones are either 1.85 or 2.35.
Yeah.
So like 1.85 is like just wider than the widescreen TVs. And then 2.35 is like solid black bars in the bottom and top.
I remember I was even talking to the filmmaker behind Always Be My Maybe, and she was telling me a lot about just the specifics as far as end credits go Netflix. Like, it has to be done a certain way, and she had to get the okay in order to have like a little bit of end credit footage play with her movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's just
interesting
hearing about the rules and restrictions from place to place, especially now that we're in a space where, you know, that's on the rise more so than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that was the only like quote unquote restriction, but I was thrilled that they were going to go wider with it now for this season. So, you know, 2.35 was the only, everything outside of that. I had never been able to shoot anamorphic before, like anamorphic lenses.
Oh, God.
So I was able to do that for the first time. And it was like, you know, it was a little bit more expensive.
Oh, my God. They give me anxiety for that reason.
Yeah, no, and there's just not as much, it's not as much of a safety net when you're shooting anamorphic. You know, it's the focus is touchier, and you can't in post adjust the frame up and down if you need to. So, you know, if you want to adjust the frame, you got to blow up the image a yep. little bit. So I don't know if that's boring technical stuff, but I was
technical stuff and stresses that I can relate to all too well.
Yeah, so that was a thrill. So I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it's such a fast thing, but they give you a lot of creative freedom.
That's the most exciting thing about it to me. I mean, and you have all these filmmakers who are kind of on the rise and making names for themselves, and you have a company like Blumhouse and Hulu that are letting people have creative freedom to make the thing that they want. You don't really get that very many places.
No, yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's cool, and I you know, other than the Go 90 shows, which are not even able to be seen right now, so it was like I was so grateful.
I'm going to keep checking in with you on that too. I really want to see it now.
I can send you. I have private links.
Okay,
I can send
yes, please.
You. We just can't share
sorry,
the
guys.
Public, but I was just thrilled to have the opportunity to do something. You know, it's hard out there to get stuff made. So
yeah,
you know, it was just amazing to get on this crazy train and make a movie. You know?
It really is. We have to wind down now, so I feel like you have to come back and visit us again when you have yet another thing out there,
because
I know you're going to keep making some wonderful things. But just because it is the holidays right now, and you did make Holiday Horror, what is it? And this is like the broadest question ever. There's a million and one answers to it, but what do you think it is about holidays and horror that go hand in hand?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. What is it about holidays and horror?
There's a lot of ways you can take that. I know what my answer is.
You mean particularly Christmas holidays? Or just mean
holidays in general? I mean, I for one of my favorite qualities in any horror movie is when it takes something that's a very normal thing for me and kind of turns it on its head.
Right.
So anything that takes the comfort of Christmas or New Year's or whatever, and puts a scary tinge to it. I don't know. It just makes me rethink how I go about that particular holiday myself.
Yeah, I think it's sort of maybe the same rule for comedy too. But I feel like you take anything that's sort of sacred or taken seriously and then you kind of mess with it. I think that's always fun, you know.
And that goes for
comedy and for horror.
When you take something happy and joyful like Christmas.
Exactly, yeah. And then you turn it on its head that way, yeah.
This is why this is so random, but Erlinger is always telling me about all the legends they have in Iceland. And, you know, it's like the whole world has Santa Claus, but we predominantly have Santa Claus and they have Grýla. And
oh yeah,
like why don't we have that kind of stuff in the States?
Right,
I'm jealous. I love that. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank
today,
you,
Charles.
Thank you for having me,
guys. And check out A Naughty Piece of Work on Hulu, and also
Nasty. Where
did I just get naughty from?
Well, it's Christmas.
I'm making a sequel to your movie. That's probably not going on Hulu. Can you tell everybody where to find you on social media, or if you have a website, or anywhere else that people can keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm at Charles Hood, but the O's are zeros. So at CHARLESH00D on Instagram and Twitter. And I've got that Light the Fuse podcast, which is a Mission Impossible podcast. It's just at Light the Fuse Pod. I've got that with Drew Taylor.
I still can't believe how many times Drew has told me to listen, and I have failed to actually do so. And I can't believe it's you that's on it with him.
Yeah, we've interviewed like 5 Oscar winners.
That's crazy.
We've interviewed Brad Bird and Christopher McQuarrie.
What a
Robert
cool series of films to dig into, also.
Yeah, well, legendary editor Paul Hirsch, we just had back on the show a second time. He edited the original Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. So it's a really fun show. If you're into filmmaking at all, it's not just for Mission Impossible fans. It's more like a filmmaking podcast through the lens of Mission Impossible.
I will always take one of those. Thank you again for your time
today. Thank you so
Check
much.
It out, guys, on Hulu. We will see you soon with more exclusive Collider interviews.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, From Negative to Positive, brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We begin today's meditation with a few sipping exercises to remind us a little treat can go a long way. So pick up your McCafe iced coffees, close your eyes, and deep sip in. and deep satisfaction out.
Take a treat retreat at McDonald's. Right now, get a McCafe iced coffee in any size and any flavor for just 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.